On this week's show, a balancing act with Matt Cole from Wings Testing and Balancing Co. All right, Travis Voss, great to have you at the table with me today and bringing a new type of contractor. This is going to be a different episode, guys. You're going to join along for a little bit of a learning lesson on my side here. I love learning about new contractors. So, Travis, thanks for bringing Matt along with you today.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's always glad to help a crewmate out and get some time. And yeah, you know, like we've always talked about the, you know, you and I are not from industry. And one of the best things about it is discovering the people involved. And you always learn somebody that does something different, right? Something that you've just never, like, what the heck? What the heck are they doing on that ladder, right?
Yeah, what the heck are they doing on that ladder? What was that acronym you just used? So Matt, our first TAP contractor, which we're going to get into here in a minute. Or is it TAP? Did I get it wrong already?
You already messed it up.
You had one job, Jeff.
I had one job. My job here is to be the idiot in the room. So I do it really well, and I'm very comfortable with it. So morning, Matt. How are you, man?
I'm great. Thanks. And it is TAB, testing and balancing, T-A-B. So testing, adjusting, and balancing.
I like this. Listen, guys, you know we're going to have some fun with Matt here. Obviously, it's going to be a good one because I'm going to lean into the unknown for a while. Before we do, though, check us out on YouTube, guys. YouTube.com/@TheContectCrew. Follow us. Follow those shorts. The shorts are really taking off. And, you know, keep up. You never know when some new spicy stuff's going to come out. Been a little bit spicy these days, so I'm excited. All right, crew, it's back. The next evolution of Bluebeam's legendary user conference, XCon, is here. It's called Unbound, and it's coming to DC this fall, September 30th to October 2nd. You know the vibe. Expert insights from industry leaders, cutting-edge construction tech, Bluebeam training and certification, and unparalleled networking with your global peers. Unbound takes that legacy to the next level with new AI-powered workflows, global AEC connections, but don't worry, they kept the free Bluebeam certifications. Keynotes from my hero, Duncan Wardle, former head of innovation and creativity at Disney, and Apple's legendary co-founder, Steve Wozniak. Use our exclusive code, UnboundTheCrew, for a discount, and join us as Bluebeam evolves and leads the digital construction movement. Register now at unbound.bluebeam.com, and we'll see you there. Use code UnboundTheCrew. All right, we're back. So, Matt, we really do want to learn what these new acronyms are for us. But first and foremost, we've got to learn a little bit about you. How did you get here today, and why is this a bit of a balancing act?
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, my name is Matthew Cole. I'm from Hamden, Connecticut, which I believe that you might be an alumni of that town even, Jeff. I went from Quinnipiac University.
That is correct. We found that out. Pretty sure I have served your significant other some pizza.
That's right. You know, we are the pizza capital of the nation. And I know that might be fighting words for a lot of your listeners, but, you know, I'll hold to it. So I kind of came into the testing and balancing industry in a sideways way via some acting school up in Connecticut. And now I just act like a contractor when I'm at the meetings and pretend I know what I'm doing when I look at the blueprints.
Oh, that's great. So explain what this is for those listening, because I'm with Travis, man. I absolutely adore this process that I've been doing for 10 years. And whether it's a job site that happens to me or at a conference or when someone calls me up and says, hey, I have this group I want you to talk to. And you're like, wait, what do you do? So explain what this all is for people listening that don't know what you do.
You could imagine how it's like for me because nobody's heard of it, right? So I've got to explain this all the time. So testing and balancing, right? So we're going to have a project, right? We're going to have a construction project. You're going to have an architect and an engineer that design a building and design the systems inside of the building. And you're going to have installing contractors that go and put those in. Your mechanical contractors, your plumbers, your sheet metal workers. All of those trades go and set up a system. Now that system is there. It's got to get turned on. It's got to get tested. It needs to make sure that the materials that were used were proper, needs the craftsmanship was right, and how much air is coming out of that diffuser. It's supposed to come out a certain number of CFM. Well, that doesn't just happen automatically. We have to systematically go through a system and test it for the flow rates, make adjustments. So that's testing. And then there's adjusting, right? Adjust the dampers, adjust the valves, adjust the speed of the fan, adjust the water flows on the hydronic system. And then after that, the system will be balanced, where we go through and we make sure that if everything is supposed to be 100, we got everything at 100. And then each one of those is in balance to one another. And so the system is operating as the designer intended. And we really kind of close the circle on the construction process. Occasionally, we deal with the commissioning side of it, right? Or we work with the commissioning team, and we're part of that group that's just kind of validation and showing that the engineer's intentions are being met.
So to me, this sounds, you know, straightforward. Like, this is what you'd want to do. You'd want to make sure that the system's working optimally, but it's not always that straightforward of a relationship. So what's some of the things you run into, and what's some of the myths you want to dispel? Because I, this is one of those things where it looks good on paper, but
for sure,
now we're in practice.
Yeah. And so really the key thing is the balancer is not the enemy. The balancer can be your friend. The balancer could be your friend as the owner. The balancer could be your friend as the mechanical contractor. A lot of times there's an adversarial relationship between the installers and the balancers because the installers say, well, this guy's just picking on me. Well, no, if you covered the damper handle with the insulation and I can't move the thing, well, you're going to have to fix it. Now, can we work together and I could just bring this to you and you could fix that right on the spot? Or do we got to get to a point where it goes into a report? Because we're just here to tell the facts. We're here to adjust it as close as possible to what it's supposed to be and then move on, do our report. Now, the installers, the best ones that I work with are partners with us in this process because they know that they're going to get less callbacks if the system is adjusted to operate as intended. They're not going to have to go back for a punch list because we're helping them work through all of those items and show that, yes, you did 100% of what's in your contract and you delivered. And so that partnership is really where some of the best work comes out. Sometimes we work for the owners. Sometimes we work for the engineers. Sometimes we work for the commissioning authority. Now, regardless of who's signing our check at the end of the day, our integrity as balancers mean that we write what we see. We're not going to pencil whip this thing. And, you know, inappropriate balancing contractors that only wanted to work inside of a place that had a nice cafeteria. Right? Because they never left that, right? They opened their roll of blueprints and they cracked open their notebook, grabbed a cup of coffee, and boy, I can't believe how fast he did that job.
That never happens, right, Travis?
No, never happens. Yeah, I'm glad you went that way because that was going to be kind of my first question is like, and Jeff, I'll put it out. You missed your opportunity to say, so what is it you say you do here? But I'll tug on that because my first question was going to be a little bit more about like, who do you work for? How do you get in there? But I'm coming into the trade, right? I've just got accepted by the local SMART and I'm trying to decide if I want to work for a tab contractor. Can you describe to me a little bit about like what my day might be? Why do I have this weird tent looking triangle thing that I might climb up on a ladder? Talk to us a little bit about the tools. I know we want to talk technology too, but kind of give us the basics of where we're at right now and what my day might look like.
Yeah, so testing and balancing, you're going to want to have a little bit more of a math background. We utilize some basic algebra formulas on a day-to-day basis, but it's the kind of things that you forget after high school, and it comes back to you when you get into this. We deal with heat transfer and psychometrics, an engineering kind of mindset. We do take apart shivs and pulleys and put it back together, so you have to have a little bit of mechanical ability as well. You're going to be up and down a ladder a few times an hour. We're going to be carrying around that device you're talking about, which is a flow hood. And what that does is it captures all of the air that's coming out of a diffuser, right? It puts it into this like popcorn machine that you would see in a lot of people, oh, you're making popcorn with that thing? Oh, no, I'm just here to catch the bat. So that device, we walk around and we measure the airflow at all the diffusers on. Now, on a day-to-day basis, you have to be able to work independently. Primarily, testing and balancing jobs, there are a variety of sizes, but predominantly they're one person or two person jobs. We're not running crews of 10 out to a place. Although if you have some kind of mega project, obviously that certainly would happen there. But you know, you could be working in a strip mall one day, setting up the new air conditioner for the Jimmy John's that went in, and their hood exhaust for the griddle, right? You could be doing that one day, and the next day you could be in a hospital, and you could be setting up an isolation room or a hospital operating room. You might wind up inside of a college environment and testing a chemical fume hood or a fire damper inside of a school. We might be testing indoor air quality and fresh air ventilation rates at different places. We do surveys of assisted living in nursing homes. What I really like about it is that when I was in the field all the time, there was always something new. There was always a new system to look at and a new challenge or opportunity to figure out. All different kinds of systems. You get to see it all. You're not just working on Johnson controls or Siemens controls. You're working on every kind of controls. And so you get to really see the gamut about what's out there inside of the industry. And as you do some new construction stuff, you get to see how new technologies are happening and new ways of production and installation are going into place. And we're really kind of, we have to stay at the forefront of all of that stuff in order to remain relevant in the testing and balancing industry.
Well, there you go, Jeff. You know everything now, right? You ready to become a TAB contractor?
I'm ready to become a TAB contractor, except maybe, as everyone who listens to the show knows, the shivs and pulleys part might get me shoved and pulled out, because I take them apart really well. Put them back together, that's not my forte. Ask anybody who's actually done a construction project with me, and it gets a little interesting. I definitely need the IKEA version of everything. What I thought was cool, first we'll go back, and I'll do it back to you, Travis. You said smart, but I know that not everybody listening knows that you're not just looking for smart people. Smart is actually the union of sheet metal contractors. And so when you're referring to that, you're talking about a new apprentice coming into this smart program. But I love that I am now cannot say you will never use that math again to my son. I will say, I know a place you can use that math again if you want. Because we do say that, like, when are we ever going to use algebra? Well, Matt just gave us a reason that you're going to use some algebra. And I like all that differentiation. I think it's one of the things that people don't give enough credit to that our industry in general provides. You don't get bored. You're not doing the same thing over and over again. You're going out and you're, and I love that, you know, air handling systems and the new systems we're putting in these advanced hospitals and labs, and they're intricate. So I can imagine just how much these women and men doing the jobs have to learn. I'm interested in, you know, every one of these has a reason, right, that they were invented to come in and check and to come in and make sure it's working right. What are some of the outcomes if you don't do this right?
Well, you might not see bad air quality, but you'll feel it. So schools in particular are an amazing example about how important proper indoor air quality is, tested and set by certified professionals. There is demonstrable effect that good indoor air quality leads to higher test scores on standardized testing. Having enough fresh air prevents the spread or lessens the spread of transmissible diseases. So we got involved a lot with indoor air quality post-COVID when schools were reopening. And I tell a personal story because that kind of got me involved in IAQ, is that I have two wonderful daughters, right? And both of them were in public school. Now, post-COVID, the governor of Connecticut, where I live, provided a plan for, here's what we want to do. We want to enhance the filtration on everything, put higher efficiency filters. We want to increase the ventilation of fresh air into buildings. And we want to test all of this. Well, in the town where I live, one of my daughters was going to school, and our company went through and tested all of those units, and we set that fresh air where it should be per the governor's recommendations. We changed the schedules. We made sure the filters were upgraded, and kids go back to school. Second kid went to a school in a different town at a magnet school, And I didn't work on that one. And it had some antiquated ventilation systems. Well, guess which one came home with COVID? So it shows, right? Now, I can't say that they did the wrong thing or, you know, it didn't happen when we went to the supermarket or something. I really don't know. But I can tell you that instances of schools that have better indoor air quality have better attendance rates. It's better for productivity, okay? If the kid comes home with a cold or a flu and has to stay home from school, well, then you have a caretaker that has to stay with them a lot of the time. Or you might transmit that to your parent. And so now your parent can't go to work and doesn't have the productivity because we have bad indoor air in schools. And schools themselves are the highest population density of anything that we have in the country. Now, can you imagine the size of a school classroom? You put 30, 32 people in there plus a teacher. Can you imagine if that was an office building and those were all cubes? You know how much room that you'd have for your office building? Nobody would put up with that. But yet, yep, we do this for schools, right? We pack all of these kids into this Petri dish, and we don't provide them the means sometimes about getting proper indoor air quality. Part of what we test and what we look at as contractors and as technicians are, how do we support those kind of environments that are going to lead to better health outcomes, right? So you have better health outcomes, you have better monetary outcomes. There was a study on 60 Minutes that talked about how post-COVID that they were having trouble with maintaining occupancy rates in office buildings in New York City. And the office buildings that are going to the top of the list are the ones that have proper indoor air quality verified, right? So it's not just good health, it's good business, it's good education, it's good all around, right? So this indoor air quality thing is not just, oh, Matt gets to have another job. It's really that we all get to have another job. And then we all get to go to our job the next day.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we're sitting here in fire season right now where I live. If any of you have ever not, you want to talk technology, my newest thing is I'm on watch duty all the time here, which is a great app. If you don't have it, you should get it. It shows you all the fires around you. We have one 15 miles away. And in 30 years, I'd never had an air conditioning unit. And I had to go get one to clear the quality of the air inside the house for me and my kids. And I was fighting it at first. And then somebody said, it's not about that you don't need it. You can cool your house down, but you need to breathe. And it's amazing the difference in here right now. So I can imagine it at that high level of, you know, making an entire office building, making an entire school more comfortable and safer in the long run is a powerful piece to think about. I'm wondering what else, like, so you're doing all this, and I mean, the air quality things in a hospital have to be even more stringent, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's tons of critical environments in healthcare facilities, right? And there's very strict codes and standards that are in place that need to be regularly tested in order to make sure that they remain compliant, right? So a hospital operating room has to have a certain level of filtration. The air has to change inside of the room every so often, right? 20 times every hour, the CFM of the room needs to change. So we need to provide enough airflow into that space through enhanced filtration that the air changes 20 hours. Not only that, but there's temperature and humidity requirements that it needs to maintain. So the systems need to be designed in order to do this. The rooms need to be under a positive pressure, right? And that's so that if you have a disease that's outside, if you're in surgery, they're cutting your body open. We need to protect that as the cleanest environment possible so that we don't let an infection in. Not only that, they have to design the supply diffusers to not force the air down so fast that it overcomes your thermal plume of your body when they cut you open. It's kind of gross to talk about, but you know, all of those things are considerations as part of what we can be thinking about as a testing, adjusting, and balancing technician.
Man, I mean, Travis, that's going deep, right?
It's going deep. It's going deep.
We're full of them today.
Yeah. Yeah. There's several words that I picked out from both of you that are now swirling in my head. And it reminds me of a demonstration I saw at one of our conventions. So you mentioned fire.
You mentioned safety and you mentioned balance. You guys play a big part in the fire life safety as well, right?
That's true. Fire life safety is a very important aspect of our industry. And there's systems inside of a building, right? So inside of all of the ducts that penetrate through a fire barrier. So there's different ratings of different walls within a building, right? So you might have a 1-hour wall or a 2-hour wall. You might have a smoke wall versus a fire wall. They segregate a building with automatic dampers that get tripped off on a smoke event. If there's a fire event, there's a fusible link inside of a mechanical damper inside of the ductwork that will melt if it gets too hot, and the damper will close, preventing the fire from spreading from one space to another. Now, the fire alarm, and there's would go off, we could have stairwell pressurization systems, fans that come on to provide a safe environment for escape of whoever's in the building. We have atrium pressurization systems, atrium smoke exhaust, so that in a shopping mall or a big office building with an atrium, there's giant fans, or a hotel. Oftentimes you might see those way up at the top of the atrium, these giant propeller fans. Well, that's if there's a smoke event in there, it allows it to evacuate the smoke. Some buildings have automatic door openers that will, on an event with an alarm, will open up all the doors and turn the fans on to evacuate the smoke and pull in fresh air from the outside, allowing people to escape safely. So the stairwell pressurizations and the atria smoke exhaust help the people get out of the building. The fire dampers and the sprinkler systems protect the building. And so we also need to be thinking about protecting the fire crews that come into those buildings to deal with an event. We're all running out, they're running in. So the systems that we're talking about here, these fire and life safety systems, are also helping save the lives and keep our firefighters and first responders healthy. And so those need to be tested under regular intervals. There's all sorts of codes and standards that talk about when that has to happen. And that's something that we get involved with as well. So we need to remove the access door into this ductwork where the fire damper lives. And we need to take off that linkage and show that damper closes all the way. Because oftentimes what happens is that you can have the IT guy comes through, right? And oh boy, there's a great hole right there through the wall. I don't have to drill a new one. I'm just going to put my cables through there, right? And so he does that. And then you drop the fire damper and it's being held open because you got your IT cables in there, right? This happens all the time. And this is why you have to do it regularly, because buildings change. And continuous compliance is the way to have continuous safety. And that's what you're looking for.
You know, just before you jump in, Jeff, like, I can't remember which smack the chapter is, as California, somewhere on the West Coast, they have a chamber we brought into our convention, and you play with it, and he's talking about the stairwell pressurization. Like, you know, I'm a pretty strong guy. It's like, I couldn't get that damn door open. And it's just amazing what you can do with the just air pressure, right?
Yeah, just when you have a fan that pulls all the air out of a room, but you don't have a relief vent, right? You're not going to be able to open that door.
Yeah.
And if I can't open that door, Granny can't open it at the nursing home. So there's things that we do. We have it's really just a fish scale, right? And so you would normally, you catch a fish and you put it on that hook and you hold it up and you're like, oh, that's a 7-pounder. Well, you need 7 pounds to open the door, right? Or to get the door moving. So you unlatch the door, you put the fish scale hook on the door handle and you give it a tug. And you see if that closer needs to be adjusted. And we're going to do this with the fans on, with the fans off, depending on what we're trying to test and certify for people.
Man, you hit on a couple of different things there on just, but I am guilty of, as charged, of being that IT guy. That was my background. I have been asked to remove a cable from a particular area, and I never understood why. Now, Matt, I know why. I've also come across those walls. Now, I didn't know about the walls, and I did know one of my former colleagues at Rand Cable was like, Jeff, we can't. I'm like, just go through the wall. They're like, we can't go through that wall.
There's a firewall. Yeah.
It's a firewall. That's there for a reason, man. And I'm like, oh, man, come on. I don't want another
room.
It's
so much easier. I just need to get to the other side.
Just go right through it. Come on. It's like, no, we can't go through that wall. But I mean, thinking about just the massive amounts of responsibility on maintaining that equipment and understanding, like, who I didn't know that, you know, these buildings are built smart enough to evacuate us, but also evacuate the smoke, keep the fire and safety professionals and first responders safe on the way in. I mean, that's a lot of things I think I wouldn't have, again, thought about when it comes to a building itself and keeping it up. So it's something you don't just set it and forget it, right? You're having to come back and make sure over time those things don't change. And people like me don't run cables where you're not supposed to.
Well, that's right. And so most people in fires don't die from flame. They die from smoke inhalation. And so the first thing that we need to do is provide a clear, safe path for people to exit the building, right? And so that's where the stairwell pressurization. So we're going to flood fresh air into that stairwell and be pushing on it, right? So that it's under a positive pressure. So that when we open a door to a floor of incident, it's pushing the smoke back in there. It's not letting the smoke into the stairwell. We're pressurizing that stairwell. Now with the atrium, we're going to evacuate the smoke, right? So get the people into a spot where they're not breathing smoke. The sprinklers aren't protecting people. The sprinklers are protecting the building, because by the time the fire gets to you, you're going to be dead from inhaling the smoke. So let's get you out of there. Let's give you that time in the path, right? Now, those are fans. They might have a belt. Boy, you know what happens when you don't, you know, run your motorcycle for 5 years? You probably got to replace the belt, right? Or your lawnmower, right? All of those things that have a belt need to be cycled. And so we have to cycle test these things a couple of times a year. And so then that kind of check off, just like you go and you check whether your fire extinguisher is still charged. You change your batteries and your smoke detector. It's looking at things like that on a larger scale. Things that you just do because you're smart at home. Yeah, I change my smoke detector batteries every time we change the clocks. All right, well, every time you change the clocks, flip on your stairwell pressurization fan too.
Yeah, flip this stuff on. And it goes again to when we talk about construction, when we talk about the trades themselves especially, you think of the sort of the backwards things. You know, I don't think we give ourselves the credit nor pat on the back that we deserve for how critical the components that people work on are to continued life and safety, you know, in buildings themselves, and just how many people are involved in that process and making sure. And I think everybody, you know, I say this all the time, especially in our world, is like, we take for granted going to the building, getting, you know, to work and getting into the office and sitting down and working for the day. I mean, I know doctors and nurses that take all of that for granted because they have to, right? Because they have to work. But none of them and none of us gets to kind of do what we do if you don't have all these different contractors and people doing these things and making sure they work. And, you know, I'm going to guess that, you know, these testers and balancers make pretty good money to do this.
Fantastic. And I tell you, and it's not just the money, it's rewarding, right? Like, you know, hey, I'm not a doctor, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express sort of thing. Well, yeah, I'm not a doctor, but I do participate in healthcare. You know, I'm a tradesperson and I'm responsible to make sure that somebody doesn't get an infection in the hospital. I'm not a scientist, but I could make sure that the chemical fume hood where they're doing drug development that might save somebody someday is going to be a safe environment and not contaminate the substance that they're using inside of there. And through the training and the quality training and the quality craftsmen, through our smart partners and our SMAC the contractors together, working together, we're able to provide that service, right? It is a professional service. And so, you know, it's not, oh, you're going to forget that math, you'll never use that again. Well, I'm not a mathematician either, but, you know, I utilize a little bit of math in here. So we don't have to be a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer or a scientist in order to participate in all of those activities. And one of them can't happen without the other. So I might not be a firefighter, but I could help keep a firefighter alive by making sure that the systems that they're relying on are working properly. And so it's that symbiotic relationship that's so rewarding, as well as the cash.
Hey, listen, isn't, again, it's that if we go back to this a lot. You find with many contractors, it's really not about the cash, but it's like saying, well, I don't drive my car for the gasoline. I drive my car for where I'm going. But if I don't put the gasoline, the cash in the engine, it's not going to run. So we have some basic needs we need to keep on your car and the belts and making things, you know, work. It's one of the things. And look, right now, we covered this, you know, recently, Travis, you know, the world is in a different spot right now when it comes to employment and employment opportunities. And we're seeing, you know, massive layoffs and lack of jobs in certain sectors. Well, this is a sector that's not going anywhere and it's growing. And I'm going to guess, like, you're not going like, hey, I've got enough, Jeff. Don't tell anybody to come into the tab business, right?
No, it's a fantastic career. It's a way to go and get a 4-year education and wind up with zero student debt at the end of it, where you're already in a position to be a journey person and you've been making money the whole time that you've been learning. It's an incredible career path for people. And it's not digging ditches all day, right? It doesn't have to be, there's no paradigm for construction worker anymore because those lines get blurred. Like I said, I'm not a doctor, but I work in a hospital. I'm not a scientist, but I work in a laboratory. And so you still have the exposure to all of these things and can utilize your skill sets and the knowledge that you have. We need smart people doing this too. We, you know, we're not just looking for a strong back, right? We're looking for people that are eager to learn, that have inquisitive minds, that are bright and sharp and can understand systems. And those have a great spot in our industry. They have the ability to become technicians and supervisors and project managers and owners someday, the path that I took. You know, I started off as a rank and file sheet metal worker and I drove a truck for a while. And then I got into the testing and balancing industry. And as I went through, I just took every certification I could and I learned all that I could about the programs and different aspects of the industry. And then wound up taking over the company with my wife when the previous owners wanted to retire. So there's a path for a great life. And there's a great life even if you don't own a company. Just being a technician is a great life. Being a union sheet metal worker is the ticket to a middle class life. We've got pensions. We've got health insurance. You know, fantastic benefits and opportunities within the programs for lots of people.
That's a smart commercial right there, Travis. That's right. We're going to cut that one into a smart commercial.
No, it's brilliant. As you're talking through all the different parts that you touch, like, and I was going to comment on being a niche part of an industry, right? Because if you chop everything down, that all the different components, like, but I mean, you know, you don't want to give your folks too big a head, but they're heroes, right? They're heroes and they're making a good living doing it. Another thing popped in my head, and I feel really bad because I met this wonderful woman when we were doing our Fab Forum in Boston at the smart facility there. She had a 4-year degree from a prestigious university. I can't remember what she left doing, but she joined the sheet metal trades and became a tab worker, you know, and she was then teaching at the JATC. And listen to her story, was like, I mean, she was passionate about it. You know, she had, it was something scientific. I can't remember what it was right now, but she left that and came into tab and the passion and joy she had in it was palpable. So you guys are doing great stuff.
Great.
Yeah, it's kind of cool because that's what, like you said, you kind of hit it. We say this a lot, like strong backs are strong backs. We need them in certain parts of our industry. Like people shy away from that. It's just true. This is hard work in spots and we need people in certain areas that are strong backs and can do that harder work right now. You know, robots aren't there yet. Maybe someday, but I think a lot longer than people are saying. But on the other side, a lot of your jobs, you go to an office and you bang your head against the wall all day and in front of a keyboard and you go, what did I really do at the end of the day? I made some button so somebody could click something, or I processed some thing so somebody could do something. And what I find in the industry is, you know, energetic people who love to use their minds, use their bodies and move around. You have to be able to do that. It is what it is. Like you said, you're going to be going up and down a ladder a few times a day. You know, you got to be able to take a few things apart, but just think about the boring conundrum of life that people get into. and you talk to people in this world. And now I got a whole new group that I can talk to about getting out there, using your hands, using your body, moving around, and really giving back, you know, being able, that's what I love about Synastry. It's just about everybody can sit back at the end of the day and go, look what I built. Look what I made sure worked. Like you said, it was a lab. It was a healthcare facility. You didn't solve the chemical problem. You didn't perform the surgery. You know, you didn't teach. But all three of those things happened because you did your job and made sure it was the safest environment for them to do it. And that's what we need to do. So, Matt, thank you for coming on and like opening up my mind to a whole new world. And now I'm going to be looking for you tab contractors out there. And I'm going to know what you are, and I'm going to say it correctly.
It's not a popcorn machine.
It's not a popcorn.
I want my popcorn. And I'm going to take you up on it, Matt. I know I'm going to see you out there, and I want to see that popcorn machine. I want to meet some of the folks doing this work, because that is the value of what we get to do here at The Crew. It's the value of what we get to do in the industry. Put a highlight on this. So, Matt, thank you so much for sitting down with us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeff. And come on out to Connecticut. I'll show you the popcorn machine and we'll get some of that good pizza.
All right. We'll get some good pizza back in my old stomping grounds that look very different than when I was there. Matt and I had that talk on the pre-call, but I'd be excited to see it. Travis, man, you always bring me things I didn't see coming. I love having you over at SMACNA for that reason, man.
Oh, I love bringing them out. I love bringing awareness to some of the stuff that our folks are doing. It's like, it's just the fun part of the job. Like you keep saying, it's fun to keep learning.
And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Matt Cole. To read all our news stories, learn about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontactcrew.com. This is The Contact Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.